Hey everyone, this is Stelly Efty.
And this is Hedin Chung.
And in today's episode of the Startup Chat, we're going to talk about how to manage and decrease SaaS customer churn and why it's important.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life, and hopefully while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
Yeah, we want you to do your best.
So, you know, we know that people love when we do highly tactical episodes. And one thing that somebody requested recently, and it reminded me that we never talked about this really, although it's kind of a really big, prominent, and popular current topic in SaaS, is churn, customer churn. I wanted to chit-chat with you about this and see, you know, what your thoughts are and share some of the tactical advice that we've kind of built up over the years of running SaaS businesses. So let's start with the most important first fundamental question, which is why is managing or having low customer churn really, really important for SaaS?
So you mentioned customer churn. There's customer churn. There's revenue churn.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
There
could be seed churn if you have a per-seed model or something. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're talking about all the churn. The customer churn is like when you lose a customer. The revenue churn is when you lose revenue, which is not always the same as losing a customer. And the per-seed churn is when you lose seats. Let's say you're like a Yammer or a Slack and, you know, there's less seats that you had last month than you did this month, or you're losing hundreds of seats a month. That's going to cause you to have churn, which means you're losing revenue. So in all the cases, the fundamental problem is that you're losing revenue, right?
Yes, but it is important to understand and distinct these three things. And it's funny that you bring this up because it's one of my pet peeves. And I was most shocked about this when I met with a CEO of a SaaS company that is making, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 million in ARR. And she was telling me their churn numbers. And I asked, oh, churn. What churn specifically are we talking about? And she was like, what do you mean? And I'm like, well, is this customer churn, revenue churn, seat churn? What kind of churn? And she did not know. She was like, well, that's a great question. And I feel a little stupid, but I just get the report with the churn number. I don't really know what it refers to. And I was like, wow, okay. That's not great, right? So
she's just not managing churn, right?
Yeah. Yeah. She didn't value it enough to really get behind it. She just got some number. I would not be surprised if it's the lowest number that team can report to her, and is happy about it, happily ignorant about what that really means.
Yeah, I mean, we could sidebar this, but I'm not going to. But if you get a number from somebody on your team and you're having to represent your company with that number, I don't care where you are on your team, then you better understand that number. You know, it's pretty basic. I'm not out of disrespect to that lady or anything, because like I didn't understand the numbers back in the day either, when I got them. But now it's like, you give me a number, anybody on the team gives me a number, some tool gives me a number. If I don't understand it, I don't want the number. So I think it's really important. If you get metrics and you don't know how they're calculated, then you're going to get into a conversation where you're not going to be able to justify what you're doing.
Yeah, so let's we'll finish this sidebar with a pro tip, which is when people give you any type of number, always, 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 even if you think it's the most obvious thing on the planet, ask them how they computed that number. What's the math behind it, right? Just to double check that both people on the same page, or in some cases, making sure that you fully understand the context behind the numbers. So coming back to churn, we said, you know, there's customer churn, there's revenue churn, you know, there's a number of ways that you might make less business with your current customers than you did yesterday or last month. I mean, obviously, you want to grow as a business, as a SaaS business. You need to grow subscriptions. And because of that, a lot of the focus in SaaS companies goes into acquiring, you know, new traffic, new leads, and new MR, new subscribers. But equally, if not more important, is how many of those subscribers stick around and expand, spending more and more money with you because they get more and more value. Because that's truly retention with that churn is really the number that indicates the health of your business and how much value you truly create, and is the greatest lever to enable, you know, long-term growth. If you have massive, massive churn, no matter how amazing you are at marketing and sales, it's always going to drag you down. And it's going to be like an ever-increasing amount of gravity that makes it harder and harder for you to fly and to grow the business. So that's why it's important, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's like you're bringing new customers on and you have churn going on here, and it's just taking those customers away, or any of the ones that you brought on before. So in effect, if you're not looking at it and it's really high, you're going to be losing lots of customers all the time.
Anyone that works in SaaS needs to understand that churn is absolutely critical, and retention with that is absolutely critical. So understanding those numbers, tracking those numbers, and then investing in improving those numbers is really, really important. We should throw out a caveat, because there's a lot of listeners, I think, on this show that might be in the early days of their SaaS company. My experience, I don't know if you've seen this as well, is that in the first few months, obviously, as you just acquire your first, whatever, 10, 20, 30, 100 customers, and your business has been around for 3-4 months or so, your churn numbers should be very, very low. But that does not necessarily mean that they're going to be low overall. You just started. It's not enough time to know when customers will leave or downgrade or anything like that. So a lot of times what I see is that the startups in the first few months are like, churn numbers are awesome. We're doing great. We don't have to worry about this. And then in month 6, 7, 8, 9, whatever it is, they start seeing that number grow and grow and grow, and all of a sudden everybody panics, and it's kind of late. What's your experience in when is the time? Obviously, day one, you should worry about retention and success and how much value people get. But do you see this as, have you experienced this as well, as something that is overlooked in the early days and then it becomes like a big thing? And when do you think people should start worrying about it or doing things about it?
Yeah, I love that question. For me, like until you're at, if you're like enterprise sales, then you're waiting every year. So it doesn't really matter. Churn's a whole different thing for you. You want to like keep 85% of people every year, right? Something like that, like as a benchmark. But so that's more enterprise. If you're higher velocity SaaS, either mid-market or small medium business, you're gonna end up going crazy if you try to go worry about churn too early. Like it's just not gonna help you. You're gonna end up like just chasing the wrong thing. Like if you have 50 customers and you're losing like 2 or 3 of them every month, like that's not necessarily good, and that constitutes a pretty high churn, but it's not necessarily going to impact your business in a negative way, because that's probably not the most important thing. You're not necessarily trying to grow revenue that early. Once you're at like 100 plus customers though, this churn thing starts really making a lot of sense to look at and figure out why people are churning so you can keep growing it. I got to say, it's really like enlightening when you actually go look at SaaS metrics and go look at how SaaS metrics are calculated, and there's a whole bunch of decks and people out there that have shared a lot of stuff. But at the end of the day, like SaaS is pretty straightforward, right? You have new MRRs, so that's new customers coming in. You have expansion, which is existing customers paying you more. You have contraction, which is existing customers paying you less. And then you have churn, cancellation, which is existing customers canceling and not paying you any more. And just based on that, you can literally tell, if you just look at those numbers, even early on, you can literally tell where the levers are in the business. And the reason is like, In SaaS, they have this thing called SaaS quick ratio, which can help benchmark, one SaaS against another SaaS. So what you would do is you would look at what's the added MRR divided by the lost MRR, and you'd get a ratio. And obviously, you want more MRR added that month than lost. And so, companies have ratios as low as 1.6 and as high as like 4.5 or even off the charts. And based on that, you can totally determine, how that business is going to grow. And a great part of that, because it's lost MRR, is churn, right? So what I would say is, until you can get these ratios and until they start looking like numbers that make sense, which I would say is in the hundreds of paying customers, churn is something more you're managing pre-churn. So, you're trying to increase engagement in the product, or you're trying to get more people to activate and things like that, but you're not necessarily at the point where you should worry about people leaving, because you probably don't even have a product people love yet.
All right. That makes a ton of sense. And It's funny. So let's say, you know, yes, I mean, in the early days, you want to focus more on, as you said, like onboarding, activation, looking at how much usage do you see, what kind of feedback do you hear, you know, what kind of success stories do you get in terms of people telling you that they're a lot more productive or create a lot more value or save a lot more time, and what a lot more means. So it's trying to quantify the real value and the real ROI that you drive with those early customers and understanding those numbers and that feedback much, much better. Once you're at the hundreds of paying customers, you start needing to look at the ratios, the percentages, understanding where the business is. And then, you know, one thing we'll get to things to do to make those numbers improve over time. But one thing that is funny in the SaaS world, at least from my vantage point, is that there's a lot of different numbers thrown out there as kind of benchmarks, as what is good versus what is bad. And you know, and it's fun. Even in the last microconf that we were at, there were people quoting different numbers, and then there was even somebody on stage that was like, "Well, all these numbers are bullshit. Here's the real number, and if you have that number, your business is fucked." And then there was somebody in the audience raising their hand and going, "Well, my business is a higher number than that. What do I do?" There's a lot of insecurity on like what is acceptable or not. And obviously, you made a nice distinction between enterprise and kind of small, medium-sized business. I mean, those numbers should and will look very, very different in the benchmarks. But I'm wondering, you know, putting the enterprise aside, what are all the numbers that you've seen? I mean, you're really on top of SaaS metrics and all that, and you've been around for a minute. What are the ranges of numbers you've heard as like benchmarks? And what's your personal thinking behind what is a number that is very, very worrisome versus not? Or do you not even think in those terms?
Yeah. First, I try to take the context, right, and make sure that we're talking about the right type of business, making sure it's a subscription SaaS business, and it should be measured on a monthly churn basis. Because not every, like an enterprise business should not be measured on a monthly churn basis. It should be measured on a, you know, bookings basis to bring new business in, and a, you know, most of the time, and then an enterprise ARR for per deal. And then you're looking at churn as a yearly churn thing. So I'm taking that one, those kind of things out of it because they're not a monthly cadence. So on a monthly cadence, there's actually two metrics.
Oh, one more thing to throw in there because this is brilliant. One more thing that people sometimes misuse to make the numbers look better is that they will quote you the churn numbers, but they will not take out the customers that even if they have a monthly business, some amount of your customers might have an annual prepaid deal, right? Even if not all of them. But then the way that they compute the business is they don't exclude customers that are on an annual plan or a prepaid plan, and only track basically customers that can churn and how many of them do churn. They take all their customers and then they look at who churned and they report that as the percentage, although there's a good chunk of people that even if they wanted to cancel, they couldn't. So just something else to throw out there is kind of a small distinction that can make the numbers look different and the way you look at them.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, riffing off what you were saying, I mean, there's a concept that a lot of people use, and it's gross churn and net churn. So I just want to get into that really quickly. So gross churn would be like I have, you know, $100 in MRR and I lose $10. That means that, you know, for the next month, which means I had like a 10% churn because beginning of the month I had $100 in MRR and then I lost 10 that month. And so now I'm down to 90, which is essentially 10 divided by 100, which ends up being a 10% churn. Now, if I also had like $20 in upgrades in that month, then I could calculate net churn. So gross churn in that case would be 10%. If I had these $20 in upgrades, right, I would go from $100 and then I lost 10 and then I added 20. So in theory, I'm a negative 10% net churn. And this is how people come up with a negative calculation. What they do is, if you ever see a negative calculation, they're adding in how much new revenue came in, whether it was upgrades of existing users or even, they're counting in upgrades basically from existing users and calculating it into the churn. So So you essentially have what you call net churn, and that's why sometimes you'll see people say, I have negative churn, right? Because they're augmenting it with the existing customers paying them more money and adding that into the churn calculation.
Yep. So coming back to what you were saying before, you know, you were just about to, I think, reveal, you know, once you know the context, right? What are the kind of benchmarks or numbers that, and how?
Yeah, I'm totally getting there. Yeah, I promise. Yeah. So let's ignore net churn because I believe that's a way newer concept and something that a lot of the SaaS businesses have popularized because of their own benefits. But also, it's not a dumb metric or anything. It's just we should know the difference between gross and net. So I'm taking out net and I'm saying this is gross. So this is if you started with $100, you ended with 90, you lost 10, it was a 10% churn because you started with 100, 10 divided by 100 is 10%, right? So 10% churn would be like you need to stop your business and find somebody, the first question I'd be like is, okay, is there anyone with lower churn? And what I mean by lower churn is anyone with like 6 or 7% monthly churn, anyone meaning are there groups of people, are there segments? Because those are the ones I'd want to dig into because obviously if you're losing 10% of your revenue, your user base, whatever, every month, that's not very healthy. And you're going to have to spend a lot of time bringing in new customers or upgrading existing ones to make up for it. And I've seen businesses like that still work, but that doesn't mean they'll work for the long haul or be a smart business. And then let me go on to some benchmarks. So if you have something like 1% churn on a monthly basis, then you should be doing like a happy dance because 1% churn is like nothing. And most people I see that are dealing with like mid-market or a little bit larger contracts, like let's say four figures a year, so like, you know, over $100 a month, they tend to be, you know, those are like past small medium businesses once you hit about $100 and my expectation there would be that you're in like the 2-4% churn range. If you're lower and you're dealing with small medium businesses, you're probably in like a 3-7% churn range and you could make the business work because oftentimes when people are paying you like, you know, $10, $20, $30 a month, the churn might be high, but there's so much velocity of people willing to pay you that much money that your business might still be able to grow. Ideally, you would want to go up market. This is why a lot of companies go up market when their churn is like, you know, 4-7% or something like that, or 3-7%, because they're trying to get their churn lower. That way they can grow their revenue faster. And so that's why you see a lot of SaaS just go up market. Because the thesis is as you go up market, the product becomes stickier, especially if the product has product market fit, and then the churn goes lower. So a churn on a higher, when people pay you more money, it tends to be lower. When people pay you less money, the churn tends to be higher.
Yeah, so this is actually important for people to know is that the tendency is that the smaller the customer, the higher typically the churn is because these people are individuals that pay very little money and there's just usually less readiness to less like lock in once they bought. They just bought for personal use and maybe a month or two later or 3 months or 4 months, it's not useful to them anymore. Usually the decision is made quicker, but it's also quicker. The decision is made to stop using the product versus when you have, you know, as an extreme example, the exact opposite. And you have a massive organization that spent millions of dollars and they have totally different groups and tons of people invested in it. It takes a lot more time to obviously acquire that type of customer, but once they buy, they're probably locked in for a lot longer and then invest a lot more resources. Much more crucial for them to utilize the product, much harder for them to kind of just switch to something else. So it tends to, is the higher you go in terms of your customer size, the lower tends to be the churn that you see on average. So that's an important thing that, you know, at least first time SaaS CEOs might not be totally aware of. So what do you do to lower churn? Maybe we'll end the episode on kind of actionable ways to think about churn and to act on it. So whatever the number is for the listener today, they will probably, if their business has been around for a little while and they have a few hundred customers, they will probably want to work proactively on lowering that number. What comes to mind as kind of action items for people to do in order to lower churn and improve their churn numbers?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times it has a lot to do with who you're selling to and this whole idea of SMB, mid-market, and all that. So if you've already sorted that out and you figured out your customer segment and customer base, the best thing to reduce churn in most SaaS is to get people engaged on a weekly basis, if not daily basis. So if they're engaged with your product, doing something with it, or it's working for them and they know it's working for them every week, they're just less likely to get rid of it. And I know it sounds really basic, but many people, they're, you know, for many different reasons, they might not have to worry about that engagement until much later. What you realize though, when you look at churn and you start talking to people why they churn, and start looking at it, and if you looked at enough of the qualitative data, the patterns are pretty similar. One of the biggest patterns is I didn't get enough use out of it. It was not useful to me, which is essentially equivalent of like some kind of product market fit problem where you're selling to the wrong customer, you're selling them the wrong product or whatever. So that's actually the number one reason for churn. And the way you address that is literally make sure that people are active, focus on the onboarding, focus on the early, you know, weeks and months of their usage instead of worrying too much about, you know, 2, 3, 6, 7, whatever, a year later when they churn. So there's a lot of pre-churn things that you can do. And most of it has to do with the users you have and their behavior before they actually churn.
Yeah, it's beautiful. So, you know, it's easy to get very reactive on this. And, you know, a customer cancels and then you call them and you try to convince them of the opposite. Not to say that it's a bad idea to call canceling customers and understand why, and maybe even in some cases see if there's an opportunity to turn things around. But it is very likely way too late, because once they canceled, the decision has already been made, and it's probably hasn't been made that moment. It has been made maybe a few weeks ago, maybe even a month ago, and they already trialed a bunch of other solutions. They switched, they signed the 1-year contract over there, and then, you know, once they got all their data over to the new platform, they hit the cancel button, you call, and now it's kind of very tough to save that account. But there's a ton you can do with new accounts, which really, like, understanding why they got less and less use, usage and value out of the product, but also kind of thinking about the new customer and how to make them as successful as possible. And to me, one really important distinction here in terms of success is that a lot of times I feel like some SaaS businesses, I feel like they confuse happy customers with successful ones, right? And happy being people that give them overly positive feedback on the product and just tell them it's awesome and they love it and they tell everybody about it and it's so exciting and everything. And they just think those are their best customers because they're the most vocal, positive customers. But to me, I mean, that's awesome. But more important is, are they successful? And the breakdown there is, do they get a lot more value from the product than what they pay us? And are they fully aware of it? Can they verbalize it? And we've talked about this, I think, in the episode about how to like scale between 100 to 1,000 customers and beyond. So that's super, super important. What do you do? So is that all you do? You know, in your SaaS businesses, you keep kind of doubling down and reinvesting in the onboarding, in making people use the product more, and making more people use the product and the certain functionalities. Is that kind of all you care about and all you work on as a lever? Or are there other things that you do in parallel to that to improve that number?
Yeah, it's great. I'm going to give an example from Kissmetrics. So at Kissmetrics, we did a lot of churn analysis. Our churn was high early on because we were very good at bringing customers in, and our product was still behind that in terms of just the growth and where we should have been. And so we started really digging into churn, and we realized one really fantastic thing, which is if people are not integrated well with Kissmetrics, which is an analytics product, then they're very likely to churn within the first 90 days of paying. And once we figured that out, then we basically took that and created a 90-day plan to make sure the least amount of people churned. So every time someone signed up, from then onwards, there's like essentially a program all focused around making sure they get integrated properly. And that helped reduce churn by like 2 percentage points. So let's say we were at 7, we got down to 5. And that was just by onboarding and setting that up correctly. But we wouldn't have been able to do that if we didn't look deeply at who's churning, why they're churning, who's not churning, why they're not churning, and figuring out where the delta is. And what we learned is that people who get integrated really well means they integrate all these hooks, these events, and all that kind of stuff into Kissmetrics, and they're passing it in. Those are the folks that we can give the most value to. Those are the folks that are less likely to churn. And so once we figure that out, it was a lot of effort all around that. So for me, it's like, if you're late enough in the game and you're worried about churn, then talk to the customers and figure it out. And you'll probably have a very good product plan on improving it. It'll probably have to do with onboarding, just because then you can expose new people to some new stuff or a better version of your product. And if you're earlier on, you're going to still have to solve these onboarding problems eventually. And the reason I say that is, in today's world, it's like the activation energy of somebody when they sign up and they're ready to go is really high. And you generally don't capture that same sentiment ever again from them. So by improving onboarding and figuring out what to improve in onboarding that leads to long-term customers is going to be important. If you can do that earlier in your business, even before you're worried about churn, I think you're going to have a better business. And so a lot of the things we're doing in our companies are trying to essentially figure out the onboarding and the how to get people engaged on a weekly basis really upfront. That way we have the lowest amount of churn possible when we actually start meeting to measure it.
Love it. All right. So that's going to be your tip for the audience today. On my side, you know, just to add to this, I think that one of my favorite ways of thinking about this is, you know, stop worrying, is our churn numbers too high or too low, or how do they compare against others? I mean, all these things are interesting and important things to know, but I think a better framework to think about this is to really just look at it as a long-term initiative. You're going to always, just like you're always going to try to get more traffic and more exposure, more leads and more signups for your SaaS product, you will always want to work on improving your retention numbers and your churn numbers. So look at it as a never-ending quest to improve the quality of your product and the value that customers get, which means just look at your own number, whatever it is this quarter, and try to improve it the next quarter. And then whatever that number was, see if you can do something to make it better the next quarter. And you can do the occasional look around what other people say and do and what they report as their numbers. But if you really focus on where your business is today and just make that number better and better, then you're fine. And you have to, it's less stressful usually and less, it's more actionable, like more focused on improving whatever it is that you have without worrying too much about it. Except with the exception if you have, I don't know, like 10, 20, 30, 40% churn, because then the house is on fire and you need to not just improve, you need to like fundamentally figure out what the hell is going on right this second. But in all other cases, just try to make the number better and work on it with a very long-term view. Alrighty, that's it from us. We shall hear and see you guys very, very soon.
Bye.